Good morning and welcome to the Ninth Circuit. We've submitted several cases already. They are Valdez-Zamacona versus Blanche, Otero Rosas versus Blanche, Quant Zepeda versus Blanche, and People of State of California versus Chiquita Canyon LLC. The first case we have for argument is Luong v. Blanche. Hopefully, counsel, you can hear us.
I can hear you, Your Honor. Good morning. Good morning to all honors. Okay,
great. Counsel, whenever Mr. Gerardo, whenever you're ready, you can begin. Hopefully, you can see the clock. So, if you want to reserve time for rebuttal, just pay attention to the clock.
Okay. May it please the court. I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Michael Jurado, and I represent the petitioner in this matter, Mr. Chan Luong. Here, the BIA never had the opportunity to evaluate Mr. Luong's diligence under the legal standard that this court recently articulated under Esquilian. The immigration judge himself found that removability was unobtainable for decades due to the repatriation of Vietnamese nationals. Esquilian requires that these facts be evaluated under the correct diligence standard that is present today before this court. Because that standard was never properly evaluated by the BIA, this court should remand. This case comes down to when should the diligence clock have started running for Mr. Luong? Well, the BIA said it started in 1991 when he was placed in deportation proceedings. But Esquilian says something different. It says that the petitioner who cannot be realistically removed, the diligence clock does not start until that removability becomes a realistic possibility. And Mr. Luong could not realistically be removed for decades. The immigration said so in his findings when he denied the original motion to reopen, that it could not be effectuated due to the repatriation to Vietnam was unobtainable for policies at the time. That's the immigration.
Should we remand to the BIA for the BIA to consider Esquilian in the first instance, or should we try to apply it here?
Well, Your Honor, I believe we should remand to the agency. They have not yet analyzed the Esquilian doctrine. They need to analyze it on its first instance. Doing so today before this court without having the opportunity for the agency to make that their own findings would not be correct. So I believe the court should be remanded so the BIA gets its opportunity.
Okay. And then my only second question is, Esquilian relies heavily on the fact that the petitioner was a stateless person. Your client is a Vietnamese, and so it's not quite the same. Or is that a distinction that would make a difference in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The petitioner in Esquilian was stateless. Mr. Luong, in our case, is a national of Vietnam, so he's not stateless. But that doesn't necessarily change the analysis, in a sense, because Mr. Luong has been here for decades. And we can show that the government wasn't able to effectuate his removal because he was on an order of supervision for years, coupled with the bilateral agreement that we had that the United States had with Vietnam at the time. So there is a distinction can be made from statelessness to an individual who cannot be removed from this country.
In your view, when should the clock have started for him to file a motion to reopen?
I think the record supports that as early. There's no exact date, but I think the record supports a factual finding of no earlier than 2017 when the immigration judge said in his decision denying the motion to reopen that the United States was beginning to repatriation the Vietnamese nationals as early as 2017. So I believe that's when the clock should start and no earlier than 2017, not 1991, where the board and the immigration judge started the clock.
In Esquilian, the board actually provided notice to Esquilian that she was now removable, that they could there was a way to remove her. Has that ever happened here?
Well, Your Honor, my client, Mr. Luong, in his declaration that he provided in the motion to reopen, there's no specific date where he became aware, nor he was told he was ordered he would be effectually removed. He just did a Google search on his own in sometime in 2018, and he acted. He hired counsel for the 1473 motion to vacate in California. Additionally, for years, sometime in 2012 and 2013, one of Mr. Luong's previous counsel indicated and told him that it was nearly impossible for him to be sent back to Vietnam and he was not going to be removed. So for years, he didn't act because it wasn't possible.
It was the agreement with Vietnam to not repatriate enacted before his final order of removal?
Yes. Hold on. Apologize, Your Honor. Okay. It is for when Vietnamese nationals who entered pre-July 12th, 1995, and Mr. Luong entered this country as a refugee roughly at the age of four in 1986, I believe, or 87, well before the 1995 date, the repatriation treaty analyzed.
Okay.
My understanding is in 2008, there was an agreement to start repatriating some people to Vietnam, but that they agreed they would not repatriate anyone who arrived here before 1995. So I think before 2008, there was no one being repatriated to Vietnam. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes and no, because the memorandum of understandings began with starting after 1995. They made a distinction between pre-95 and after 95.
Right.
So
the way I see it, in 2008, they said, we're going to start repatriating people to Vietnam, but only people who arrived here after 1995. Oh. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
That implies before 2008, they weren't repatriating anyone. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. Before 2008, no Vietnamese nationals were being repatriated back to their home country.
And then I'm not sure what was happening between, it's unclear. It seems to me that there's a new agreement as of November 2020 that allows for repatriation of people who entered before 1995, but it's not clear to me what was happening between 2017 and 2020. Maybe that's a question for the government's counsel, but it seems to me there was no official agreement until November 2020. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. Yes. So going back, Your Honors, the due diligence is, well, let me backtrack. This argument doesn't just live and die by the Eskelian argument or the equitable tolling. There's another issue. There's independent grounds for remand, such as missing the 2022 Vatiker order in of itself, which is material evidence that affects Mr. Luong's removability, and that the BIA still had not the opportunity to view the complete record of the Vatiker, nor analyze the new correct due diligence standard. So if we were to remand back to the board, they can analyze under the correct standard with the facts already in this record, in addition to being able to view the complete 2022 Vatiker order.
Do you believe that's my time? Understand what happened after? So there was a motion, 1473.7 motion, and then there was the state court reduced the conviction, right? Modified the conviction from, I think, second degree robbery to first degree robbery. And then it's unclear to me, was there an appeal? Was there a second motion? Was there something else that resulted in a complete vacatur? Or is that something that you're saying needs to be established in a new?
There was a secondary motion but that's not in the administrative record, Your Honor. So my client did have a second motion to vacate in 2022, and it's not in the record.
Counsel, you have about a minute if you want to save that time.
Can I save it for rebuttal, Your Honors?
Yes.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Snehas, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Rebecca Nahas, and I'm representing the United States Attorney General. The court should dismiss the petition in part and deny in remaining part. Petitioner waived any challenge to the agency's denial of sua sponte reopening, so the court should dismiss the petition as to that claim. The only issue before the court is petitioner's statutory motion to reopen, which is undisputedly filed 24 years late. And so the question before the court is due diligence. And the agency acted well within its discretion in finding that petitioner did not satisfy the due diligence requirement to warrant equitable tolling of the filing deadline. And Eskillian does not change that result. For at least three reasons. First, petitioner did not exhaust the claim that was raised in Eskillian. Petitioner, instead of arguing that he should be excused from the filing deadline because he was not removable, instead of arguing that, he said he was diligent because he filed within a reasonable period of 1473 being enacted. And even though Eskillian hadn't been decided yet at the time of briefing, he could have, just like the petitioner in Eskillian, raised this claim in the first instance. But
counsel, is that really a claim? The claim was that he was reasonably diligent, and so therefore the tolling should be excluded. I don't think you have to make that precise argument in order for it to put the BIA on notice of what reasonable diligence would be.
Well, I think that the agency reasonably applied the Bent standard of when a reasonable person would have learned of the adverse consequences of a criminal conviction, and that was an NTA.
Right. And so, then Eskillian says that a reasonable person wouldn't be concerned about that if there's no possibility of removal.
Right. So at no point was this claim raised before the agency.
That's my point. Is that a claim? That's not a claim. That's just an argument.
Right. But I do.
The claim is reasonable diligence, right?
Sure, Your Honor. But I think that the argument itself also needs to be exhausted in order to provide the agency an opportunity to consider it. But
do you have precedent that suggests that type of like fine tune and exhaustion is required? I thought it's under our precedent, it's just whether or not the BIA is put on notice of what's being challenged.
I don't have anything off the top of my head, Your Honor. I apologize. And I'm happy to turn to our secondary arguments that even if this claim is exhausted, that Eskillian does not change the outcome of this case. First, petitioner did not provide the date on which he learned that he could be removed, as the petitioner in Eskillian did.
Well, in Eskillian, the record reflected the agency actually specifically told Eskillian, you're now removable. So it seems to me that that's possible that it's not in the record because that's never happened here, in which case it would seem that Mr. Long has actually been far more diligent than Eskillian because he's been acting even without any such notice.
Well, I don't know that the absence of evidence that he was told means that he wasn't told. He was appearing for his supervised periodic meetings with ICE. I think the last one was in 2018. And I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that at that point, at least when he filed his motion to reopen, at the very least, that he was aware of that he could possibly be removed. But in any event, Your Honor, there's also a reasonable person standard. And so Eskillian was focused on the subjective nature of the inquiry. So petitioner in that case said that she learned of the removability in 2018. But there's also an objective component of when would a reasonable person have learned of the removability of Vietnamese nationals. And we think that, as petitioner acknowledges, a reasonable person would have learned around 2017 when the first Trump administration began removing Vietnamese nationals. And even petitioner's attorney's affidavit indicates that this was common knowledge, not only among immigration practitioners, but also Vietnamese citizens, and that it was widely noted in the media that these that the administration had begun removing individuals to Vietnam as early as 2017. So even if we measure, if we generously measure the point at which we assess diligence from 2017, we still have a failure in proof because the next thing that we know is that he hired an attorney in December of 2018. So that's at least a year gap where he was not pursuing his rights. And so I think that the diligence finding is the same either because
but counsel, that requires some fact finding, doesn't it? And so shouldn't we remand to the BIA to do that fact finding in the first instance?
Well, I think that it would be futile just because of the nature of the evidence before the court. And this is, a motion to reopen. The petitioner bears the burden of proof, and it's a heavy burden of presenting the evidence and making out the claim. And we just don't have sufficient facts. The IJ said 2017. So even using that, it's a foregone conclusion that
so first of all, the IJ didn't have the benefit of a skillion, neither did the petitioner. But also, it seems to me that at most we have is a limited a report of some discussion of limited returns in 2017. And we don't have an actual agreement to repatriate people in the circumstances of Mr. Long until 2020. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. But I do think we have the affidavit from his attorney indicating that it was widely known that the U.S. had begun removal efforts with Vietnamese citizens. But our third argument, I think, is, it's independently dispositive and I think doesn't really turn on the Skillian framework. And this is, even if we assume that petitioner gets to toll the deadline through the date that the state court vacated the conviction, he still waited 1 year after that date to file his motion to reopen. And he hasn't provided any explanation for that failure to
That depends on really when he was, because under a Skillian, one argument would be that he didn't have to start doing anything until the agency said circumstances have changed and you are now subject to repatriation to Vietnam. And it's not clear to me that's ever happened, in which case everything he did was more than was reasonably required under a Skillian. So especially if there was no formal agreement to start removal until November 2020. I think there's also unclear right now, it seems to me, he was continuing efforts to get complete vacatur of his conviction, which would be another form of diligence. So I'm not sure. It's just, I think part of the problem here is that we don't have a complete record of what was occurring, what the agency actually informed Mr. Luong, and when there was actually a realistic possibility that he was going to be removed to Vietnam and whether he was notified of that by the agency. So it seems to me that there's been a significant change in the law that needs to be reconsidered on remand.
To your question about the record, yes, I do agree that the record has a lack of evidence, but I think that burden, it rests on petitioner having been the party moving for reopening. And I think it would be an unreasonable read of a Skillian to carry the date of when we measure diligence to the present if the petitioner never learned. I think there needs to be a reasonable person standard as the court has applied in every other context in assessing due diligence. I think it would be unreasonable to say that the person gets to carry the deadline, especially what prevents them from sticking their head in the sand and not learning about this in order to benefit from this equitable tolling argument. With regard to the evidence of the new vacature, I think that the proper course would be for petitioner to file a motion to reopen. This is new evidence. It was never submitted or considered by the agency. And so we don't think that that's a proper basis to remand.
Counsel, before we move on, you're running out of time, I did have one other question about the alternative basis. So it seems to me that IJ denied, said even if there was equitable tolling, 1473.7A1 grant, you know, for the would not essentially would be a vacatur for to avoid immigration consequences, but we held the otherwise in Bent. We said it's actually a procedural or substantive vacatur, and the BIA didn't seem to adopt the IJ's reasoning. It just said it wasn't clear which subsection of 1473.7 the motion was granted under, but I'm not sure why that matters now, because both A1, A2, and A3 would all be now after Bent substantive or procedural reasons for vacating or modifying the conviction. So it seems to me there's also is there a reason why the BIA, it mattered which subsection motion was granted under?
I'll just start by stating our position that this issue has been waived because petitioner's opening brief changed course and argued of a vacature under A3, not A1. So we will continue to argue that that issue is waived, but I would like to answer your question that we believe that I think that you're right that regardless of what subsection 1473, I do think that the court need not decide or reach the board's decision regarding whether petitioner proved which subsection the provision was vacated under, because even if he proved it was A1, which was his claim below, the IJ's decision is correct because the government's position is that Bent has not decided the question of whether a vacature under A1 is substantive or procedural, because the court looked at the plain language and remanded for the agency to decide that question on remand. And we think that there remains an argument that the vacature under 1473A1 expands the rights of individuals beyond what the Constitution, the federal Constitution, requires, and therefore the government doesn't meet the federal standard of whether an immigration conviction remains valid for immigration purposes. And this is, of course, something that we didn't brief because our position is that it was waived, but that is our position.
Okay, I understand.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Whenever you're ready, Mr. Harada.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be short. Yes, although the record in this case is not complete, the factual building blocks are complete in this case, enough for the Askalian framework to be properly analyzed on its first instance for the board. With remand, the board can view the complete record, apply the correct legal framework as it stands today, and then make its decision after analyzing the complete record as it is. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both for the helpful argument, and apologies to both for mispronouncing your last names. I guess I was equal in botching both your names. So thank you. The case is submitted.